and welcome or welcome back to Sex, Scandals, and Shenanigans. My name is Adrian, and I'll be your host. In this show, I discuss history and mythology's most notorious mistresses and lovers. I ended up taking a nice vacation from the Angevin. With the sex plates of Henry II and his harlots, I needed a bit of levity. Or not. While we've been in England and France for some time discussing Henry's love life, I'm a wee bit tired of Henry's shenanigans, on the field and from the bed first. Therefore, we're going back to Olympus, bitches! Just a note of caution, this episode will be discussing triggering topics such as non-consensual relationships, extreme violence, rape, and sexual assault. If these topics are sensitive to you or triggering, please feel free to not listen to this episode. Listener discretion is advised. I briefly chose three different gods to think about discussing: Apollo, Aphrodite, or Hermes. Like any other large mythological figure, I will be separating their immortal and mortal lovers. It only seems fair. Then I thought some more and decided, come February, I'll then discuss Aphrodite. It seems right to release her stories and antics during the month of love. Now, I will say, it won't be my fault if you're listening to this and then you have a Thanksgiving baby. Just saying. But giving your child my name as their middle name will suffice. Plus, I think there needs to be a discussion distinguishing the difference between Aphrodite and Venus, the Roman variant of Aphrodite. More to come in February 2026. See, I'm already planning for future episodes. This post-holiday treat of an episode will discuss Apollo. There are many great stories featuring this god, who is not just vengeful, but overly amorous, but is it consensual? Some call him inspiring, musically, poetically, or even the healing sort of god. Then there are his emotional victims. Don't worry, ladies and nymphs, I promise I will make sure you get your story told. But be wary of his attention. Notable women can lay claim that his obsession with them was not all fun and games. So as I always say, let's dive in. Apollo was born to Zeus, king of the Olympic gods, and Leto, the titaness of motherhood and child protectiveness. Hera could be a foil for Leto, or vice versa. Hera was the goddess of women, marriage, family, and childbirth. That part will get interesting, I assure you. These are all parts of the domestic goddess, or so the saying goes. Leto's traits are that of a kinder domestic goddess: motherhood, demureness, and modesty. Hesiod considered Leto one of Zeus's seven wives prior to his celestial marriage to Hera. Furthermore, Leto was described as always mild, kind to men and to the deathless gods, mild from the beginning, the gentlest goddess in all of Olympus, per Theoi.com. As usual, Zeus's attention to attractive women was well known and led to many troubling situations. Zeus needs to keep his dick in his pants and or toga. But he never learned. If you wish to learn more about the sexual mores of Zeus, please refer to Season 1, Episodes 10 and 11. You're welcome. Zeus pursued Leto, who, after their liaison, became pregnant. I mean, any woman or female usually did. Examples include immortal and mortals alike: Hera, Demeter, Persephone, Maia, and that's not including his mortal lovebirds, Alcmene, Leda, mother of Helen, Clytemnestra, Castor and Pollux, and Danae. I think I made my point. Like father, like son, as we shall see. Anyway, Hera found out about Zeus's infidelities yet again, and Hera's vengeance just seeped out of her immortal pore. To prevent Leto from giving birth to her children, some say twins, others say that Artemis was born first and then Apollo. Spoiler alert. Hera made things very difficult by banning all kingdoms and lands to not allow Leto to birth her children. Zeus had made the floating isle, which was at this time known as Asteria, who was a titaness herself, but unlike her sister Leto, Asteria was able to turn herself into a floating isle to prevent Zeus's romantic pursuit. In any case, because Asteria was not attached to the ocean floor or to a land, Leto was able to rest there and give birth to her children in peace. Also, Artemis was born first, and then, according to legends, actually helped her mother give birth to her brother Apollo. Yeah, if I were to have kids, I really don't relish having my daughter see my hoo-ha while giving birth to their sibling. Nah, I'm good. If nothing else, Hera embodies smothering instead of Leto. But that's just my take. While trying to get her sister Asteria, hence to be known as Delos, Leto, spurred on by Hera's hatred, was chased by the monster Python. Python chasing after her to prevent the birth of her children. This won't be the only time monsters or giants are pursuing a heavily pregnant woman, by the way. Per the Homeric hymn 3 to Delian Apollo, Leto arrived in Delos, taking 9 days and 9 nights to bring the godling into the world. To assist Leto with her birth, the following deities were with her: Dion, another Zeus romantic target; Rhea, Zeus's mother; Themis, Again, another romantic target of Zeus, and Amphitrite, the wife and consort of Poseidon. The one goddess who was not there to help Leto, Eileithyia, the goddess of childbirth. Yeah, she was hanging out in Olympus with Hera before she got wind of Leto's pregnancy and impending births. Eileithyia was finally convinced by the messenger goddess Iris to leave Olympus by receiving a gift, a necklace of course, to help Leto safely deliver her babies. From her appearances, Apollo finally was able to make his godly debut. Once born, Apollo was given the godly ambrosia instead of breast milk, like his mortal half-brother Heracles. One source, Servius, a grammarian or grammaticus in Latin, basically an educator in teaching Greek and Latin to young children of the rich and powerful. Anyway, he wrote that Artemis was born in the night and became one with the moon, and that Apollo was born in the day, thus being attributed to the sun. Apollo was given the name Phoebus in Rome as well. Suffice to say, Apollo was not the personification of the sun, but has its attributes thrust upon him. The personification of the sun, of course, is Helios. Apollo was following godly gifts: music, prophecy, healing, and archery. Each of these powers has a great story attached to them. So now that we have a condensed version of how Apollo came to be, let's discuss briefly how he came into each of those attributes. First two, archery and prophecy. It's a fucking doozy, y'all. I didn't know this part of Leto and Apollo's story, but here we fucking go. Once Hera had prevented any land to allow Leto to rest and pop out her kids, Hera called upon the giant Tityus to pursue and harass Leto. Per Theoi.com, great site by the way, Tityus assaulted Leto while pregnant. Tityus was the son born of Zeus and Alara. Zeus had to hide Alara, a Boeotian princess, because of course, why are we not surprised at the fact that she's a princess? Okay, whatever. He had to hide her from Hera so that she would not be tormented like his other mortal lover. Tityus, who then became so big in Alara's womb that he split her in half and essentially killed her. Gaia had to take over so that he could be born. My hoo-ha just clenched and it was not fun. So while Tityus had a mortal mother, he was also born of Gaia. That becomes important later. Anyway, to get back at Zeus's infidelity again, Tityus was ordered by Hera to pursue and assault, aka rape, Leto and prevent her from giving birth to her children. Another alternative story or version was that Tityus was overcome with lust and just had to have her. Okay, sure, Jan. We all know that Hera was known for her antagonistic anger issues, especially when it came to women who did not have a choice. More dubious consent or dubcon versus outright consent to have sexual relationship with Zeus. We all know that he was a hit and quit it kind of god. But as she was being held against her will by Tityus, who was about to rape her, she called out for her children, Artemis and Apollo, to slay the giant. Apollo came with his bow and arrows and shot the giant and prevented his mother's assault. Unfortunately, Tityus did not die, but was punished by his father to spend eternity in the underworld by having his liver pecked out and eaten by two vultures, similarly to that of Prometheus, but without the redemption arc. Next adventure while his mother was pregnant. So we're kind of rewinding here. Python. Yes, a snake entity in every sense of the description. Again, while pregnant, Leto was pursued by another monster at the behest of Hera. Hera thrust Python, who hailed from Delphi, to chase and harass and assault poor Leto so that she wouldn't pop out Zeus's crotch gods. Now that Leto has popped out Apollo in the story, at 4 days old, Apollo went out to avenge his mother. How nice. Apollo and Artemis tracked down the snake who so traumatized their mother and then killed it. In doing so, Apollo then declared that he would be the new overseeing god of Delphi and then take over the oracular duties and its shrine. The Oracle of Delphi was under the protection of Apollo. Delphi became a home or place attributed to him. The people of Delphi who hated Python were elated with his demise and welcomed Apollo. Win-win, y'all. Now, after 4 days, Apollo has become a grown man. He's an adult now. Now, I do need to retell the story of the mythological bromance between Apollo and Hermes and their brotherly meet-cute. Hermes, another major Olympian god, was born to Zeus, again, not surprising at all, and the nymph Maia, a Pleiad, who was also the companion of the seven sisters to Apollo's sister, Artemis. Y'all, these people get around in very small circles. I'm just saying. Relax. Don't worry. Apollo makes up for his sister's decision to remain a virgin. I assure you. Well, Zeus, with his roving eye and wandering dick, spies a lovely nymph and they have their secret affair. They shag, she gets preggers, pops out little Hermes. Remember, we're talking about Maia here. Well, once the little scamp has entered the world, he sees a herd of 50 cows, Moo, bitch, get out the way. Anyway, the owner of these cows was Apollo, who apparently also oversees shepherds. Hermes takes the cattle and then has them walk back to his hidey hole cavern in a way that only leaves one set of prints. The bevy of bovines are now with this little shit. He takes a cow, kills it, probably for food, and then keeps the sinew, or the muscle string. He then sees a tortoise, more likely kills it, and then from the tortoise shell, and from the shell of the tortoise, and the sinew of the cow makes what we now know as the lyre, creativity and ingenuity. Finally, seeing that his herd has now vanished, Apollo has found where they are at, with Hermes. Apollo was going to unleash the unholiest of godly punishments on this little shit until he heard the lyre. Oh, it was music to his ears. As Hermes was playing the newly created instrument, Apollo fell hook, line, and sinker to its melodic charm, to the point that Apollo suggested a trade between his cattle and the lyre. As we are aware, music is an entity that Apollo oversees as a god. At this point, Apollo allows the herd to stay with the young god, and he takes ownership of the lyre, which is also under the umbrella of Apollo's godly duties, protecting shepherds and music makers. From here on out, this began the strongest of romantic relationships in the Greek mythology pantheon known to mortal kind. This relationship Apollo has with Hermes is probably the closest one he has aside from that with Artemis. But we must move on from Apollo's good choices to some eyebrow-raising ones. Like his father, he's arrogant, and similarly, Apollo's not just keen on one gender, but enjoyed relationships with both men and women. But again, we need to get to his immortal lovers. Per Theoi.com, here are his immortal and or semi-divine lovers. I'm going through them alphabetically. It made it easier. Hecate. Well, he certainly is brave, isn't he? Yeah, this threw me for a loop. Hecate is the goddess of witchcraft, crossroads, and ghosts. I wonder if she saw any of his previous lovers once they died and shared stories over whatever is that shades can drink. Oh, and during their relationship, it's told in one account that when they banged, Scylla was her child.
Yikes.
Hestia, daughter of Cronus and Bran, Apollo's paternal grandparents, and his father's sister. She was the goddess of hearth, home, and family. She did not reciprocate Apollo or Poseidon's romantic endeavors. Hestia opted to be a virgin goddess, also known as Vesta in the Roman pantheon. Calliope, one of the nine muses, daughter of Zeus and Mnemosyne, and the muse of epic poetry. She was the mother of Orpheus, one of the Argonauts, and the best singer, orator, and musician. He married Eurydice. She died due to a snake bite. He went to retrieve her from the underworld, let her out, and looked too soon, and she died again. He then wandered the lands, all sullen and depressed, so he was the mythological version of Emo, came upon the Maenads, the crazed followers of Dionysus, and was then killed by body limb tearing. Makes for a good opera. You know what? He just fucks all the muses. He slept and loved them all, and because he could not decide with whom he wished to be with, he decided not to marry. Next one. Talia, another muse, the muse of light, verse, and comedy. Through their union, she birthed Corybantes, the dancers who celebrated the Phrygian goddess Cybele. So because the muses were daughters of Zeus, he shagged at least two, if not all nine, of his half-sisters. Way to keep it in the family. All right, here we go. We're going into nymph mode. Athusa. She was a Boeotian nymph. She had one named son, Eleuther. Apparently, Eleuther won the Pythian Games because he was talented in singing, and he erected a statue of his uncle Dionysus. Acacalus. She was a Cretan nymph who bore Apollo two sons, Philandros and Philoctetes. Acacalus was the daughter of King Minos of Minotaur story fame and Queen Pasiphae. All right. Here's the biggie. Daphne. She was a naiad or a river nymph. Daphne was born the daughter of Peneus, river god. After defeating Python, a few days after being born, of course, an argument between Apollo and Eros, the son of Aphrodite and Ares, had erupted. Essentially, Apollo got mad at Eros for using arrows that he was too young to be using such a powerful weapon. Because Apollo is an arrogant god, Eros decided to exact revenge on his uncle. Eros has, in his arsenal, two types of arrows. Golden ones to make someone fall in love, and leaden ones to make someone be averse to another person's romantic pursuit. This becomes important now. To get his revenge on Apollo, Arrow shot him with a golden arrow into his heart or his marrow, depending on the story. When he saw Daphne, he fell head over heels for her. He pursued her relentlessly. However, Eros had shot her with a lead arrow into her heart or marrow. She declined Apollo's romantic overtures. She declined his every attempt to seduce and love her. We also need to note that Daphne was a follower of Apollo's sister Artemis, the virgin goddess of hunting, archery, and the moon. Daphne, who just wanted to do Artemis follower things, and Apollo interrupted her life with his amorous pursuit. It got so bad, Daphne was running away from Apollo. While they were running, Apollo was just about to catch up to her and try again to convince her to be with him. She cries out to her father, or to Gaia in other versions, "Papa, Papa, please help me." Peneus heard this plea and then turned her into a tree, which is now the laurel tree, hoping this would stop Apollo from further pursuing her. It didn't. According to Ovid, Apollo touched the laurel tree trunk and could still feel her heartbeat. Furthermore, he could use the laurel leaves as a crown for the Pythian Games, again similar to the Olympic Games. The leaves were to crown victors of the Pythian Games, royalty, and for other special occasions. He would use her wood to create lyres and use his godly powers of youthful eternity, immortality, transferring the laurel tree as an evergreen. Talk about obsessive love and love bombing. Then again, he is his father's son. Poor Daphne. The next lovers. Chrysothemis. Oh my god, I can't pronounce these names. Sorry. Another nymph, apparently they just sprang from their areas, from Bubastos, Perthioi, located in Asia Minor. She was the wife of the mortal king Staphylos. Out of her children, a daughter named Parthenos was born from their tryst. Chrysothemis was the daughter of Carmeltors, the original winner of the first Pythian Games, who was probably crowned with the leaves from Daphne's tree. Chorusia, another naiad, a river one, from Phocis. She bore Apollo like Chorus. She was from Mount Parnassus, again, one of the regions that is overseen by Apollo. Cyrene, she comes from the Lapith lands. Her tryst with Apollo, she bore him two sons, Aristaios and Idmon. Also, she's considered a Thessalian princess. Aristaios became the god of beekeeping, honey, shepherds, and olives, of which we know that honey has medicinal property. Idmon was a seer god, which tracks, being the son of Apollo and him being the god of prophecy. And augury, the knowing of the bird omen. I guess you can call him the Greco-Roman version of Odin / Wotan with the seer and augury power. Idmon was also an Argonaut, but he died while trying to help Jason and his band of other heroes, including Heracles, to obtain the Golden Fleece. He died in Bithynia. I wonder if you saw that coming. Leuconoe, another nymph from Phocis, and again with her liaison with Apollo came their son Philemon, who was a bard, or a singer, or storyteller. Other myths have recounted that with Apollo, she bore Thyla or Kailano. I couldn't find a lot of information for them, so sorry. Melaina, another focused nymph who succumbed to the amorous pursuit of Apollo. She bore Apollo their son Delphos, and he founded the site of Delphi, and this is where Apollo's main temple was located and led by the Oracle of Delphi. Delphos also ruled by Mount Parnassus. Melia, an oceanic nymph who was kidnapped by Apollo. I see a trend here. And he took her to Thebes. She had a brother named Canthos who went to retrieve his sister, but unfortunately he was smited by Apollo for his nerve of trying to protect his sister. Also, because he was pissed off for his sister being abducted by Apollo, Canthos burned Apollo's temples. Melia had two sons with Apollo, Taneros, a Theban prophet. He was known for his foresight and keeping and tending to his father's temple, and Taneros also saw over the oracles in Thebes. He was also favored by his uncle Poseidon. Ismenos, another son, but hardly any information was available. Sorry. Okrhoe, and I probably pronounced that wrong. It is spelled O-K-Y-R-R-H-O-E, Okrhoe. I tried. She was a daughter of a river god, Imbrasis, from Samos, located in the Greek Aegean. Similar to Daphne, Okrhoe was not interested in Apollo's romantic pursuit. She sought refuge on a boat from a sympathetic fisherman. Unfortunately, the boat was then turned into stone, and the fisherman and or skipper, the owner of the boat, was turned into a pilot fish. Also, the skipper's name was Pompilus. Here's some more information about the pilot fish. The fish is very slippery and can be found in the Red Sea. According to the site seahistory.org, pilot fish are carnivorous. They're part of the jackfish family, which means nothing to me, to be honest, and can be found hanging around sharks, rays, and sea turtles. The theory is that the pilot fishes piloted ships to ports or sharks to prey, explaining their behavior of following ships and sharks to get food scraps. Also, they eat parasites. How nice. Lovely. That's just lovely for them. Othrys, another nymph, another day. She was from northern Greece. From their affair, she bore Apollo his son Phaedrus. Othrys, through her relationship with Zeus, gross, bore his older son Miletius, who then raised Apollo's son Phagrus or Phagor, depending on the story. They raised bees together, like one of their other half-brothers from earlier, and Miletius, who was prophesied to take care of his brother, by the way, then became the founder of the city Phytria. Uraea, fantastic. Another sea nymph from Troy. Granted, these ladies are part of the immortal crowd. She was the daughter of Poseidon, so they were cousins, and their affair was taking place when Troy's walls were erected. The walls went up when Apollo's arrow went up inside Uraea. She bore Apollo his son Ilius. He is connected with the kingdom of Troy. Sinope, another nymph who caught the amorous attention of Apollo. Gotta love the alliteration I'm doing here. You're welcome. She's from southern Greece, and Apollo found her, abducted her. Huh, where have you heard that before? And took her to Assyria, near the Black Sea. The city of Sinope was founded in her honor. She has two stories. One, she tricked Apollo into swearing that he'd keep an oath for her remaining a virgin. Or two, they slept together, and from their union with Cyrus, the first king of Assyria. Who knows which is more plausible? I sincerely doubt she stayed a virgin. Stilbe, another Thessalian naiad nymph who caught Apollo's wandering one-eyed snake. With Apollo, she bore two sons, Lapithus and Centaurus, or centaurs. Lapithus founded the family of the Lapiths, who eventually went to war with the centaurs, or the family of his twin brother Centaurus. Centaurus was the father of the centaurs, half man, half horse. Well, the horse part is the bottom part. Maybe they should go hang out with Pacifist, since she likes animal fucking. Anyway, if you're interested in another version of the centaurs, please refer to Zeus's episode, season 1, episode 10. Cilis. And lastly, another lovely nymph from southern Greece of Ciconia, whose affair with Apollo produced one son, Zeuxippos. I just took a stab in the dark trying to pronounce that name, so if I said it wrong, my bad. He was the king of Sicyon. After his death, his successor was Agamemnon, the brother of Menelaus, or to make it more interesting, the brother-in-law of Helen of Sparta or Troy. Clytemnestra was Agamemnon's wife, and Cassandra, who then became the mistress of Agamemnon, unwillingly of course, after the defeat of Troy. Spoiler alert, but it's been like well over 2,000 or 3,000 years, so it's not really a spoiler. Anyway, Cassandra will get her own story told in the next episode. So, I know I recounted the immortal lovers of Apollo, and knowing my hand hurts, but not as badly as when I was writing his father's escapades, though. While it seems like a lot of names here, I'm finding that the scandals and shenanigans really come to fruition with his mortal lovers. We shall see. Thank you for joining me on today's episode. I apologize about not getting this out before the new year, but yeah, family, work, and lack of will are to blame. Part 2 of Apollo's sex scandals and shenanigans will be forthcoming. Please do not hesitate if you wish to make any recommendations, topics, people, or requests. I welcome most of them. Thank you again for joining me on this episode. Until next time, try not to get into any shenanigans yourself, as I just may end up telling your story. Today's episode's artwork is Bernini's marble statue of Apollo and Daphne from 1622 to 1625. Show art is from Jan Steen's A Girl Eating Oysters. Show music is from the Advent Orchestra performing Vivaldi's Concerto for Two Violins in A Minor, RV 522. Sex Scandals and Shenanigans podcast is hosted, written, and edited by me, Adrian. And once again, thank you for joining me, and until next time, bye!